Years ago.
And Bob Marley came and the Wailers came to perform. And it was about probably 80, 90 people.
That's it?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Today, we are here with Hurdle White, BBC Leicester's longest serving DJ and BBC's longest serving African Caribbean DJ of the whole of the UK. So he's allowed us into his house. We are in I'm going to call this your room.
My room.
That has everything that's inspired Hurdle over the years. So an introduction to you. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's nice to be on this special occasion that you're planning.
Yes.
Thank you.
We've come down to talk about you and talk about what makes Hurdle Hurdle.
What makes Hurdle Hurdle? Jumping over the hurdles.
So I want to know a little bit about your childhood.
My childhood, born in Jamaica. I remember growing up in Jamaica. It was five of us, two boys, three girls. My brother and my sisters, they all went to secondary school or high school. Mm-hmm. I stayed at the local school till I was about 16. And spent a lot of time with my dad. My dad was a rural farmer in Jamaica. That time growing in Jamaica, your father said something and that goes and there's no coming back or anything like that. And I used to go to help my dad. And even when it weekends, things like that, you didn't get a penny. Yeah, that you could go and buy a bowl of cake, as we used to have our paradise from that we used to. So when I was 18, my mom decided that I, probably best if you go to England, learn the trade. And then my parents knew some family in the same district that were living in Luton. And they wrote to them and said, would they be able to take me? Arriving in England, 1959, at Heathrow Airport, and the people that were supposed to come and meet me at the airport, they weren't there. I came over and the BOAC, my dear.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't come over on the ship.
Yes.
Yeah, I was different.
Yeah. No, as many did.
And I arrived at Heathrow Airport. And with all these white people, and looking around for the folks who were supposed to come meet me, and couldn't see any sign of anyone, and I begin to get anxious. So I went to this taxi guy and said, "How do I get to Luton?" And he said, "Oh, you take a train."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Me? Coming from country in Jamaica, going on the trade from London to Luton, I might get lost." So I
at said, 18?
Yeah. Wow. So I said, no, I can't. So I said to the taxi guy, "I can pay you to go to Luton." And he looked at me, gone out, where is this black guy going to get all that money to go to pay to go to Luton? But I came over and I think I have between 15 and 20 pounds in my pocket. And at that time, that was a lot of money. And he took me to Luton, 339 Hightown Road. I can never forget that address. And the gentleman came out and said, "What are you doing here?" Because they have already booked a car to come and pick me up the next day.
Oh.
But for the first 2 weeks I was in Luton, I cried. I want to go back to Jamaica. Because there was no one of my age group.
Mm.
And most of the time, most of the people gone off to work. So I was left alone in the house, afraid
really
to venture
lonely.
Out.
Yeah.
Afraid to venture out because, coming from country, it's one street.
And you know all the neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. So eventually I got settled in and the folks that were staying with have relatives in Leicester, and I came down once or twice, a couple of times with the guys. And the first time I came to Leicester, Haiti, was awful. It was raining, it was dull. And, you know, I think, why does black people come all this way down there? Honestly, you know, come all this way down this horrible place. But the following year, I came back, and it was during the summertime.
Mm.
And it was lovely. And I thought, yeah, yeah. So I came back to Leicester in 1962. And, you know.
I hear there was a good nightlife over here at that point, though.
In Leicester. Mm. Very much so. Mm. Yeah, very much so. But for me, I was afraid to go to most of these places because I didn't want to get into any trouble with anybody. You know, I was afraid that I get into trouble with people. My parents would be very sad. Mm. So I didn't want anything to upset
them. Were you quite shy?
I was. I honestly was at that time. I got my first job in Leicester as a bus conductor. And I did that for about 3 days. I gave it up.
3 days?
3 days. Oh, God. Yeah, it was
no commitment.
Honestly.
You didn't like it, though.
And where we're staying, the guy was working at a shoe factory. And he said, they need someone to pray the heel of the shoes for ladies' shoes. So I did that for a year or something like that. Then I met Frances, my wife, and we were going out together. And she said, that's a horrible place, all the fumes, stuff like that. So I saw an advert in the local paper, and Bentley Engineering, they need turners. So I have a little idea about turning. So I went did the interview.
What's turning?
You make the parts.
Okay.
So the machine is a turning, Herbert late turning machine.
Okay.
Where you make the parts for the hoser machines.
Okay.
Yeah. Right,
okay.
And I stayed with Bentley Engineering for 21 years.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
So you found something you did like.
Yeah. And the money was good. And yeah. I had family, you know, could pay her a mortgage and stuff like that. And then Radio Leicester came along 1967. And my wife, who was a primary school teacher, were listening to Radio Leicester, and they have some children program on, and she rang in and to say, oh, she didn't think much of it. And being a school teacher, they asked her to come along and help and do, you know, show them what the best thing to do. So I went along. And during that time, while we were doing that, the producer of the program said, why do you do a Caribbean Roundup news program, 5 minutes thing? Mm-hmm. So I got two of my friends, Neville Cook and Dave Blissett, to help out. So we started that. And then they said, what about doing some Caribbean music? And I haven't done any kind of DJing or stuff like that, and have very few music. I got music, but not as much. And I said, oh, yeah. So we did. anything to promote Caribbean culture, you know, music, because at that time there was lots of reggae music, Going Gray, Derek Morgan, Larry Lakin. Bob Marley were just about coming on the scene then. Mm-hmm. And then, we started at 15 minutes every Wednesday, dinner time. And I was still working at Bentley. So I got my lunch break from 12 till 1 at Bentley. So on Wednesday, I would clock out at 12, jump into my car, rush down to Charles Street, get up the 9 lift to go to the ninth floor at Radio Leicester, got there for about 20 past 12, half past 12, did my 15 minutes of music, Caribbean music, jumped back into my car, rushed back to Filbert Street, that's where our factory was, and I was talking at 1 o'clock. And I did that for about a year.
Wow.
And while I was doing that, 1971, yeah, I think it is, Bob Marley came to Leicester. Bob Marley was, there was problem in Jamaica, and Bob Marley was living in England.
Yeah, it's a few got shot, yeah.
And he was doing a tour, and Bob Marley wasn't that popular at that time. And he came to Leicester and he played at what is now the Manfred University. And Bob Marley came and the Wailers came to perform. And it was about probably 80, 90 people.
That's it?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Gosh.
Yes. So my friend and I went to see Bob Marley, sat on stage with Bob Marley and the Wailers, Peter Tosh, and Bob Marley. So I did an interview with Bob Marley, and we're still doing my 15 minutes on the radio. And then I edited, let the producer listen to it, and he said, no, we can't use it, because Bob Marley spoke deep Jamaican accent.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was saying, people won't understand him. And I'm saying, the people I'm playing the music for will understand Bob Marley. Mm-hmm. And he said, no. But what he was saying, that English people wouldn't understand Bob Marley. And I was determined in saying that the people that are listening to my program would understand Bob Marley.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no. And I was so vexed, I chuck it in the bin.
You didn't? They,
no, we didn't play it.
Not at all? It's
not
never
at
been
all.
Heard?
No, it didn't. Nobody.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or were that upset? Because telling this guy, the people that are listening to the program will understand. And funny enough, it was so, I didn't know this. There were so many English people. Even the present Radio Leicester manager, mom, every Wednesday, and she's English, white English, and she's saying her mom and her every Wednesday, they used to rush to listen to the Caribbean music. So it wasn't that just black people were listening, it was lots of other people as well.
So did you find that a lot? Was there some kickback on what you could do and how you could do it?
Oh yeah, because you weren't producing the program, you got a producer, and they decided what you should do and you shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, lots have happened since when I became producing my own program and producing that program. You decide what things that goes into the program, so you have much more freedom.
Yeah.
And I think because lots of people say to me, "What do you think that was about racism?" And looking back, because BBC at that time were all posh people, you know, you got the Oxford, Cambridge, that type of people that would go on television or on radio.
Very much speak like BBC.
Yeah. You got to have the BBC old chap and that kind of thing, you know. So I could understand, but no, I didn't. Looking back, because it's so much racism, it's so rife now, you're looking back and you say, maybe it was, and maybe it wasn't. But to be honest, I really believe that he did that because of the sort of English posh accent.
Mm.
And it wasn't just some sort of Caribbean accent. I mean, if you come from certain places in England, you wouldn't get a job on BBC because you haven't got that sort of Oxford, Cambridge voice. It's only over the last 20 odd years you get ordinary English people, white people.
So at that point, when you first started doing the radio station, were there other Caribbean presenters in different cities?
No, it was after.
So you were one of the first.
Yeah, it was after that. Then you have Radio London, Radio Birmingham, Radio Nottingham, and you get lots of other stations picking up all over the place.
So you're the trailblazer.
Ah. I don't know. People say I am, but I just think I was in the right place at the right time.
But that's a lot of it. That's, you know, that's a lot of time. That's what it is. So what kept you there for so long? Because how many years is it?
Oh, over 50 years. I enjoy what I was doing, and also give me the opportunity to get other African Caribbean people into radio as well, help people like that, and to promote African Caribbean culture, because I strongly believe we got a really exciting cultural background and something that we should be proud of. And, you know, I'm always waving the flag. Not that I'm not interested in English things, but, you know, that's a background behind you. You know, I like England very much, and one of the places I would never leave. Yeah, so I'm deeply into English culture. But, you know, you can't forget your own culture as well. And I always try to promote it as someone that need help in getting what they want within the BBC. I tried that over the years, and some have been very successful and some haven't.
So what did it, when did it go from the 15 minutes in the afternoon?
Yeah.
Because then it was in the evening, isn't it? Like for many, many years.
It went to Friday night for an hour. Then it went on for another 2 hours. Then it went on for another hour. So it was between 6 and 9 on Friday. Then it went to Saturday. Then it come back to Friday.
So, you were at Bentley for 21 years. So you were doing this in parallel?
Yes.
Was that just greedy? you didn't want to leave one for the other?
Not really. Because when I was at Bentley Engineering for the 21 years we were there, I was made redundant. And I think one of the reasons why I was made redundant, I was a shop steward as well. And the senior shop steward called a strike. And then the Bentley Engineering management decided, right, everyone could come back except the senior shop steward. And I was really annoyed. I was saying to all the guys and other shop stewards, we shouldn't let it happen because this guy put his neck out for us. And now that the company management is saying everyone else can come back except that guy. And about a year after, things begin to get worse at the company, losing jobs and whatever. And I went in one Monday morning. And they said, you've been made redundant. So I came home, and it was April Fool's Day. I came home and said to my wife, I said, I've been made redundant.
And they didn't believe you.
No, it was true. But luckily, after that, the carnival job came up. So we'll coordinate the carnival for about 5 years.
Oh.
While still doing Radio Leicester.
Yes.
So when I finished with the carnival, then I...
I didn't realize you were the coordinator for
carnival. Yeah, I coordinated the carnival for 5 years. Mm. Yeah, at Charles Street. That's where we have our building, headquarters.
Okay.
So when I finished that, then I go clinging straight into Radio Leicester sort of thing.
Yeah, so it's prime position. So what do you think... of since you've left the radio, that because there's not really been a hurdle in that space since then. How do you feel about that?
Sadly, things have probably not the way I would have liked it, because you don't get much Caribbean news or Caribbean program or music and radio, and not just Radio Leicester, throughout the country. While I was there doing my program, every local station have a Caribbean program, music program, you know, a community program where you go and discuss community problems and stuff like that. And now hardly there isn't any.
Yeah, there it is.
And that is very sad.
So with this amazing legacy that you've had, you know, from me looking in on it, what for you is your biggest achievement?
Oh, that's a good one. Haven't asked that question before. My biggest achievement, you mean coming to England?
Whatever.
In general.
It's your answer.
That's a real difficult one. What's my biggest achievement? Being on Radio Leicester and able to help other African Caribbean people coming into radio, going into television, that's a big achievement, because probably if I wasn't there, probably they wouldn't have got that opportunity. So, yeah, I think that's an achievement. And been on the radio for such a long time. Never dreamt that I would have been in that position. And at the same time, leaving Radio Leicester, I remember my end of my time when we have a sending our party. And I was really amazed that the people over the last 30 odd years that I knew during that time at Radio Leicester, and they all came, and everybody was so nice, and not being big-headed, they were genuine people coming up and said, you know, it was such a pleasure working with you, sort of thing. I was surprised. And also, lots of people, I go out and lots of people, oh, you're a celebrity. I never put myself in that position. I never think because I'm on radio, I'm better than any other person like that. It's the same hurdle. Is what you see is what you get. I never pretend to be what I'm not.
I think that's something I would credit you for, that you are one of the kindest, loveliest, cheekiest gentlemen that I have ever had the pleasure to meet. And I think that to me is part of why you have had this amazing career and this amazing life that you've put forward.
Well, thank you, Karen. You are, Tara.
You're pretty cool. I'll give you that.
I give you the brown envelope.
Thank you. Payment. Thank you.
Yes.
Where do you see, I mean, there's two different questions I've got, because one is, what would you like your legacy to be? And I'm looking around here at all of this music, these records, that 100% there is a lot of money going on in here on these shelves, because I'm sure these are some one-offs
and
I can only imagine. So what do you see as your legacy?
My legacy?
Or what would you like your legacy to be?
To be remembered.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to be remembered for?
Someone who is thoughtful, down to earth, don't pretend to be what he's not, who try to get other people of color on the ladder, try to help where I'm in a position to help. I became I don't want to go off that, but I became a magistrate. Was a magistrate for 20 years.
See, you kept that one quiet.
Yeah, and my reason was, during that time, you were hearing lots of black people going to court and get really sent to prison or do this, not because they were guilty, just because of the color. As soon as a magistrate or a judge see that person, oh, you got to be guilty. And I went in, and I remember doing my interview for a magistrate, and you know, why you want to become a magistrate. And they said, I'd like to see justice done for everyone. As a magistrate, if I'm sitting there, a black person comes in and he's guilty, I'm not going to pretend that he's not guilty. He's guilty and he should get punishment. And the same thing would apply for anyone who comes in there. Mm-hmm. If you're guilty, you're guilty. If you're not guilty, you're not guilty. And justice got to be done to everyone, mm-hmm. not because of the person's color. Mm-hmm. And that's why I became a magistrate.
Wow. I never knew that. That was a little piece that I didn't know as well. Okay. And the other, which we've touched on earlier, is where for you is home?
For me, home is Leicester. You know, I say to many people, oh, you're probably going to retire in the Caribbean. Say, no, this is my home. Leicester is my home. My kids, my children are here. My grandkids are here. I'm not going nowhere. This is my home.
This is home.
Leicester is my home. Leicester is a wonderful place. Love Leicester.
And on that note, I am going to say thank you very much for sitting down with us. Thank you for introducing us to your lovely home and letting us see a little bit more of inside Hurdle and what you're all about.
Tara, thank you very much, because you're really nice, nice, down to earth person as well.
Yeah, I got a compliment off Hurdle. You're so cheeky.
Let me play you Lucky Doo.
Go on then.
Let me just play you a track.
If you enjoyed this week's episode of Voices That Raised a City, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. You can catch more inspiring conversations like these and all other seasons of our Flashback podcast series over on our YouTube channel. And to stay up to date with our latest events, exhibitions, and community projects, visit opal22.com or follow us on social media through the links in the description.